Welcome to Southern Living. My name is Leslie Hunt. I'm your volunteer reader. I am going to be reading from the Southern Living magazine, the June-July edition. So, if you're ready for some great stories and some good eats, let's get going. Our first article today is entitled Good Bones, and this is by Cameron Beale. With rich colors and whimsical wallpapers, designer Lizzie Cox helps her brother's family settle into a well-preserved 1940s Virginia home. When Laura and Richard Cullen decided to move from Washington, D.C. back to their hometown of Richmond, Virginia, they weren't in a rush to find the right spot for their family of four, but as soon as this house hit the market, they knew it was the one. I grew up driving past it on my way to family get-togethers, says Laura, whose aunt still lives a few doors down. When we looked at it, the first thing I noticed was the little breakfast nook, and I immediately thought, this is it. I can see our kids sitting here. It was one of the things I loved the most. Not only was the home just what they were looking for, something with character and charm, notes Richard, but it was also in their ideal location. Having gone to rival high schools, the pair grew up on opposite sides of town. She says with a laugh, quote, this is right in the middle, end quote, less than 10 minutes from their parents, the kids' school, and downtown. It's a neighborhood where there's very little turnover, so it was rare to find a house on the market of our street, he says. Even though you're in the thick of things, it feels like you're in the country, she adds. Everything is so green, it's really beautiful. To make the rambling brick colonial their own, they enlisted the help of Richard's sister, local designer Lizzie Cox. Constructed in the 1940s by the owners of a lumber company, the home is extremely well built, so they all agreed, don't change the bones. It's the charm of the house, says Lizzie. Rather than gutting it to create a more modern layout, they took a preservationist approach, welcoming the closed floor plan and characteristics that make the home unique. To gussy it up, as Laura says, Lizzie relied on wallpaper, paint, textiles, and artwork curated by art advisor Carolyn Wright, and kept function and ease at the forefront. We have little kids running around and a dog and a cat that follow us to each room, so everybody is always together, says Richard. The first spaces they tackled were their daughter's bedrooms. Since we were moving to a new place, making sure they felt comfortable was really important, says Laura. The whole house was still undone, but their rooms were perfect and they loved them. For Cece, who was 6 years old at the time, Lizzie highlighted her favorite color with Caudrille's Tonal Purple Links 2 wallpaper, matching Roman shades and a custom amethyst-hued bed to create a cocoon-like spot. A lot of people shy away from stripes with an angled room, but we really embraced that, says the designer. Tihei's bedroom got an even more fanciful treatment. To capture the four-year-old's personality, her aunt enveloped it in Anika Reed Studios' Pegasus wallpaper and painted the trim Benjamin Moore's Bedford Blue, 1679, to match. We were laughing because Lizzie had picked out a beautiful wallpaper, and I said, that's not going to work, recalls Laura. Tihei is a wild woman, and this is very much her. A green antique Jenny Lind rope bed Laura scooped up from Facebook Marketplace pulls it all together. I love how the bed is off. It adds that element of the unexpected, says Lizzie. Downstairs, while others may have opted to open up the kitchen by ripping out the breakfast nook, the designer leaned into the cozy feel. We packed a punch in there, says Lizzie, who wrapped the entire space with Lewis and Wood's papyrus malachite, including the tailor-made benches, which she laminated for wipeability. I wanted the pattern to match the wallpaper, repeat perfectly, so you can't really tell what is fabric and what is wallpaper. It's the family's favorite corner in the house. We're in there four times a day, dog and all, says Laura. Pulling the color palette into the adjoining kitchen, Lizzie splashed the cabinetry in Farrow and Ball's blue-gray number 91, then replaced the countertops, added new knobs, and reused rugs that were in the couple's previous home to refresh the hard-working area. "It's tiny, but I love it. It's a very lived-in space," says Laura. "That everyday sensibility blends seamlessly. It was far from stiff. A locally made table and antiques helped strike the right balance, while the earthy pink walls, Farrow and Ball's setting plaster number 231, complement the green tones woven throughout the home. It just works with everything," says Lizzie. "It's not too pink, but adds a little femininity." At the center of the home, a wood-burning fireplace draws the family into the living room during the cooler months. "We didn't want a stuffy space that we'd never use. Lizzie did a nice job of balancing functionality with form," notes Richard. Above the custom sofa, a collection of tree sketches is Laura's favorite addition. "We call this our tree wall," she says. "Each one is different." Lizzie carried the same layered approach into the sun-drenched lounge, which looks out onto the garden from all sides. "We tend to gravitate toward the sunroom, especially when we're entertaining, because it gets great light," says Richard. To maintain the indoor-outdoor feel that the floor-to-ceiling windows provide, the designer covered the walls in Cowton and Tout's seagrass in aqua and swathed the trim in a custom-mixed green. She also reupholstered a pair of her grandmother's chairs in Galbraith and Paul's fern textile. "The chic blinds add that imperfect element," notes the designer. "They're kind of all different heights, and they don't care." Once a garage, the family room sees the most day-to-day action, so Lizzie relied on performance fabrics and forgiving colors in the home's subtle pink and green palette, layering in a mix of throw pillows. "This is really where they live. We loaded it up with artwork, but it didn't change the bones at all," says the designer, who gave it a facelift with drywall, paint, a durable wood rug, and Roman shades in Carrie Joyce's hydrangea bloom print. "It stretches across the expanse of the room and is what your eye goes to, so we really played off that fabric. It's whimsical, fun, and feels organic." End of story. But not really the end of story, because I captured all the captions for the pictures, and that also gives you an additional feel for this work. First impression, I feel like this is very representative of Laura's quirky, fun taste, says Lizzie, who outfitted the foyer with an heirloom chest, a Nile and York ticking stripe wallpaper, cheerful artwork, and an antique mirror. "This is the first thing you see, which I love because it's very calming and inviting," says Laura. Playful prints. Keeping a light hand in the downstairs paddle room, Lizzie spruced up the spot with a new pedestal sink, a cheeky wallpaper, Soane's polymorphore blossom in pink and red, a vintage mirror, and matching hued shades on the sconces. A lucky find. "Carolyn found this big, crazy piece, and I love everything about it," says Laura, describing the art in the family room. "It's a bit odd, a little off, kind of eccentric, and that's how I think of our house. It's not too done. It's all pretty, but very much us." All tied together. Caroline helped them choose storied works of art to anchor each space, including the dining room. "Especially since this is our forever home, it's been fun finding pieces that Richard and I both love and figuring out what we gravitate towards," says Laura. Minor adjustments. In Tihei's bathroom, Lizzie kept the vintage black and white tile but swapped out the countertop and faucet and then added Trustworth Studios Apothecary's Garden wallpaper, a nod to the little girl's love of bugs, and a yellow ticking stripe shower curtain. The guest retreat? "This space is really small, but all the windows make you feel like you're in the trees," says Laura, noting that the deep green walls drenched in Benjamin Moore's Intrigue, 158 Zoe, add coziness, collected treasures from family and items sourced from across Virginia reflect Laura's style, and that is the end of the story. Our next story is entitled Hamburgers, and it was written by George Motz. Burgers are not likely the first thing that comes to mind when thinking about Southern food. Barbecue and its many local variations has been so deeply ingrained in its association with the region's cuisine that it's difficult to imagine anything else. But, like barbecue joints, there are burger joints that have histories that stretch back over a century with multi-generational traditions and ownership. In fact, the origin stories of both barbecue and burgers are actually linked. In 1921, Kirby's Pig Stand, which was one of the first true, quote, drive-in, end quote, restaurants, opened in Dallas serving pork sandwiches. Kirby's had a direct influence on the burger drive-in, and as we all know, the popularity of these establishments clearly eclipsed that of the Pig Stand as they became staples of mid-century American food culture. It's very difficult for a restaurant to stay relevant for any stretch of time. The things that keep a great one chugging along are lessons to be learned. But one factor stands out: the people who care for them. Fortunately for all lovers of the classic burger, there is no shortage of places that have survived decades and seem entirely unaffected by time or trends. These are the spots we need to appreciate and the counters and booths to patronize. But most importantly, it's about the people who run these icons, who get up every morning and tirelessly open their family restaurants to make great meals for you. I call them hamburger heroes, and these are some of my favorites in the South. The first one up is Texas Tavern, Matt Bullington, Roanoke, Virginia. A rare vestige of a bygone era, the Texas Tavern is a place where it seems like nothing has changed since 1930. The dented steel countertop, 10 lumpy leather stools, and impressively worn footrest bar are deeply authentic. Repairs to the griddle in 1975 are the extent of the, quote, renovations, end quote, with the exception of the frequent paint jobs to the exterior that keep it looking as fresh and inviting as the day it debuted. Mac Bullington is the reason the Texas Tavern thrives. He is the great-grandson of Nick Bullington, the man who opened the small hamburger stand in downtown Roanoke. Typical of burger joints of the era, the grill area is just inside the front window. The cook station is a testament to efficient food prep and execution. An impossibly small 12 by 18 inch griddle serves as the soul of the kitchen, with two small burners above it for frying eggs. Next to that, and within reach, are containers for buns, relish, pickles, and onions. The entire complement of ingredients and cooking apparatuses to prepare the full menu occupies a mere 6 square feet. Absolutely amazing. The Cheesy Western, or the Cheesy as the regulars call it, is a glorious combination of patty, cheese, pickle, relish, and mustard with a gently scrambled egg on top. Since my first visit years ago, I've consumed more than a handful of cheesies, and I ask for them a bit differently each time. I think I've hit a sweet spot with my order, consisting of 3 paper-thin patties and a dollop of their signature hot dog chili. As it approaches its 100th birthday, the Texas Tavern looks to be in no danger of slowing down or changing anything. These places, Matt explains, if they are nurtured and loved, they can survive. Next up, Sid's Diner. Marty Hall is the owner, El Reno, Oklahoma. Just over 100 years ago, something very special happened on Route 66 in El Reno, Oklahoma. Most of the railroad town was out of work and struggling during the 1922 railway strike. At the long gone Hamburger Inn, a resourceful man named Ross Davis decided to stretch his ground beef supply by pressing thinly sliced onions into his patties. He was able to sustain his business while accidentally creating a very tasty burger. Today, only a few hundred feet from where the fried onion burger was born, Marty Hall and his son Adam keep this tradition alive. At one point, El Reno had at least 9 onion burger joints, but just 3 remain: Johnny's Grill, Robert's Grill, and Sid's Diner, all coexisting within 2 blocks of one another. Marty has retired but can still regularly be seen at Sid's. The future of the establishment is now in the hands of Adam, who looks almost identical to his dad in his younger years, especially when he's at the griddle cooking and talking to customers every day. The fried onion burger is a lesson in pure science. Marty or Adam will grab a previously formed portion of beef and, with a stiff spatula fashioned from a bricklayer's trowel, press a gob of thinly sliced Spanish onions into the meat. The burger is then flipped, and after a few minutes, the caramelized onions have fused to the griddle. Charred beef, luxuriating in rendered fat. It's served on a wide, white, squishy bun with the meat and gnarled onions hanging out. Nothing comes with it except pickles on the side. You may find condiments unnecessary, but mustard is the Oklahoma way. You are listening to Southern Living on Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Leslie Hunt. Continuing on, our next location is the Camellia Grill. Ronnie Yeager is the owner, New Orleans, Louisiana. The regal exterior of the Camellia Grill is painted bright white and features tall, impressive columns. Step in the door to discover a high-ceilinged interior with pale pink walls, marble countertops, and green leather stools that give the diner a timeless look. You'll also find Ronnie Yeager, who's been the manager for almost 35 years. Since 1992, Ronnie has been the captain of this distinctive part of New Orleans culinary history. The Camellia was one of the first restaurants in the city to employ African Americans for the front of house. Behind the counter, the upbeat waitstaff, dressed in crisp white linen coats and dapper bow ties, have witnessed a rotating cast of characters over the years and have maintained this reputation since opening day in 1946. In the beginning, the legendary Harry Tervelon and Wildred, quote, Bat, end quote, Batiste led the servers at the Camellia, with Harry being the restaurant's very first hire. For 50 years, the two played off each other, serving up countless helpings of eggs, sandwiches, and advice. "We sell a lot of burgers and omelets," Ronnie reminded me recently. "The patties are hand-shaped from fresh 80-20 ground chuck. We've tried other ground beef and preformed patties, but it's just not the same," he explains. "The ideal order here is the bacon cheeseburger, quote, dressed up, end quote, which adds lettuce, tomato, and mayo. There's also a hamburger po' boy, which is served on the best bread from the beloved Liedenheimer Baking Company." I once asked Ronnie what has kept him at the Camellia all these years, and he responded in his smooth New Orleans drawl, "It's really the employees and the owner. He lets me do my thing." Our next restaurant is Ben's Chili Bowl, the Ali family in Washington, D.C. Ben's was opened in 1958 by Virginia and Ben Ali in a former silent movie theater known as the Minnehaha. Although Ben passed away in 2009 and Virginia has since retired, the restaurant is still run by their sons, Haydar, Nizam, and Kamal. Vida and Sonia, the wives of Haydar and Kamal, also work at the business. Over the years, Ben's became an important part of Black American history, known for feeding many legendary performers who played along the U Street corridor in the 1950s and 1960s, including Ella Fitzgerald, Miles Davis, and Cab Calloway. The 1968 riots sparked by the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. started just a block away when someone threw an object through a store window. The unrest devastated the neighborhood. A curfew was imposed and the city shut down as officials attempted to restore order. Yet, Ben's remained open by special permission to feed firefighters, police, and members of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, located just across the street. To mark the restaurant as Black-owned, Ben painted the words, "Soul Brother," across the front window. Ben's is famous throughout the D.C. area for its tasty beef chili that gloriously adorns half-smokes, hamburgers, and hot dogs. It's made from a simple family recipe containing only finely ground meat in a dark red tangy sauce. Quarter-pound patties are cooked on a flat top in the open kitchen and served on toasted buns with diced iceberg lettuce, some mayo, and a decent dollop of the spicy chili. Burgers are delivered to patrons at the counter in no-nonsense plastic baskets accompanied by potato chips. After your first bite, you'll be ready to order a second. End of story, kind of. In the kitchen, which is a part of the Southern Living magazine, Southern Cooking at its Best, I found the trick to a better burger. This is an American classic plus three flavorful twists and written by Josh Miller. The secret to the best burger is right in front of you. I'm not referring to the pages you're reading, though these tips and ideas will certainly help. I'm actually talking about what you're using to hold this magazine, your hands. In the words of Test Kitchen Pro Nicole Hopper, who developed these burger recipes, it's the mixing, handling, and shaping of the patties that differentiate a good burger from a great one. Consider this your official permission to put away any fancy gadgets and presses. Now that that's done, many of us, both novices and veterans alike, tend to use too much force when molding our patties. Instead of compacting the meat like you're making a snowball, Nicole recommends having a lighter touch. Gently shape each portion into a loose ball and then toss it between your hands until the meat is tightly but evenly packed. The resulting patty will be cohesive but not dense and will grill up tender, juicy, and just right. If you don't live near any of the restaurants featured in our Hamburger Heroes story, these recipes will come to the rescue, whether you're craving a saucy take on the classic, a bacon-packed patty, a Tex-Mex twist with chilies, or a Vietnamese spin on a chicken burger. Each of these options is a delicious way to celebrate the 4th of July. So here is the special recipe for making perfect burgers. 1. Ditch the bowl. Season the ground meat on a rimmed baking sheet for more even distribution of flavorings. 2. Start hot. A clean, preheated grill is a key step to great burgers. Be sure to scrub the grates with a steel brush before the patties go down. 3. Don't flip too fast. Be patient. When the meat is properly seared, it will release from the grates with a slight nudge from your spatula. And here is the recipe for classic burgers. Active prep time, 45 minutes. Total time, 1 hour, 30 minutes. Serves 8. You need 3 pounds of 80-20 ground beef, 1 tablespoon kosher salt, 1 teaspoon black pepper, 8 slices American cheese, 3/4 cup of our best burger sauce. The recipe is going to be following. 8 sesame seed hamburger buns split and toasted. Iceberg lettuce leaves, beefsteak tomato slices, and dill pickle chips. Directions are: break up the ground beef onto a large rimmed baking sheet and sprinkle with salt and pepper. Gently toss the meat until seasonings are just incorporated. Divide the meat mixture into 8 6-ounce portions. Shape each into a loose ball, like we talked about earlier. Gently flatten each between the palms of your hands into a 5-inch patty, about 3/4 inch thick. Press your thumb in the center of each patty to form a slight indentation, about 1/4 inch deep. Return to the baking sheet. Cover and freeze until firm, about 30 to 45 minutes. Next step, preheat grill to medium high, that's about 400 to 450 degrees Fahrenheit. Place patties on oiled grates, indented side up, grill uncovered and undisturbed until patties form a deep golden brown crust on the bottom, 4 to 6 minutes. Flip the patties, grill until meat thermometer inserted into the center registers 135 for medium, 3 to 5 minutes. Place one cheese slice on each patty and cook until cheese is melted. Transfer to a baking sheet and let rest for 5 minutes. Then, spread burger sauce on cut sides of buns, top bottom buns with lettuce, tomato slices, burger patties, and pickled chips. Cover with top buns. And he gives the recipe for our best burger sauce. Takes about 5 minutes to prep and total 5 minutes to get it all together. Makes about a cup. Combine 1/2 cup mayonnaise, 1/4 cup ketchup, 1 tablespoon of sweet pickle relish, 1 teaspoon of yellow mustard, 1/2 teaspoon each onion powder and Worcestershire sauce, and 1/4 teaspoon each black pepper and grated garlic in a small bowl. Whisk it together until combined. Cover and refrigerate up to 1 week. Next week, we will do some more cooking and recipe sharing. I found some great hamburger toppings and hamburger recipes and grilling things. It's just amazing. So we are at the conclusion of this week's Southern Living Magazine program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Leslie Hunt. Thank you for tuning in this week. Keep it tuned to Sun Sounds for more great programming. Have a great week.